Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 29 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, Coleman, and I just want to say good morning, and I hope anybody that's in the path of Hurricane Helene is safe and doing well. It sounds like no one's going to be going to work in that area, so no reason why you can't tune in on your phone and listen to us talk this morning. So if you're out there in the path, give us a thumbs up, make sure that you guys are okay. And if you have anything interesting you want to share, please let us know. Jacob, I'm not showing, there's only six people in this space right now, so I don't think it's loading correctly for me. So I might have to jump off really quick and jump back on. But I see Wade out there. I see AC. Good morning, gentlemen. Is anybody else up here on stage with me?
At the moment, Coleman, you are solo, but I am here with you, and we got about 12 loyal fans in the audience, but I'm sure as the day progresses that it'll start to crank up. But thank you guys for joining us today, and yeah, Coleman, just the two of us at the moment.
All right, cool. No worries about that. I just wanted to make sure something wasn't lagging on my computer is acting a little funny this morning. But while everyone's still joining us, refilling your coffee, getting some water, getting the gunk out of your eyes, let's make sure everybody who's new here or anyone who needs a refresher like myself, the purpose and our why to do this show. And that's to make sure we defend the values that our founding fathers fought so hard for. Our rights to liberty, free speech, freedom of religion, due process, and the right to assembly should never be infringed upon. And what we've been talking about this week was planting seeds, planting Bitcoin seeds and tilling our soil, making sure that it's fertile so we can go out there and reach our neighbors, our community members, and let them understand the importance of Bitcoin and how it'll impact their life in a positive way. Because like the saying goes, Bitcoin fixes this. Us as a community, as a group, do not support tyranny in any way, shape, or form. And together, we're going to get this country back to what our founding fathers had fought so hard for us to get. So we are Bitcoiners, we are veterans, but most importantly, we are for freedom. And if you're a veteran listening to this, please reach out to us. Send us a DM. We'll get you in contact with one of our community members. There's more than 600 of us, and we're constantly growing. So don't be shy. Don't be hesitant. Make sure you reach out and just say hello to us, and we'll put you in the right direction. So we have a lot of big things I feel like dropped last night, yesterday evening, all at once. So definitely have some big topics I would like to hit on. I've been trying to get Joe Colasari to join us today, but he hasn't responded to my messages or invites. So if anybody can just want to just tag him right now and see if we can get enough people nagging him, see if he'll join us, because I want to discuss the big news that dropped with the Swan Mining and the case filing that they submitted. So we'll touch on that in just a little bit. But I think the biggest thing I want to hit on, and I'm hesitant about hitting it so early in the show, but I think it has to be discussed, is that there is now a Bitcoin charm for your Crocs. You heard that right. There is a Bitcoin charm you can throw on your Crocs and is being made by CryptoCloaks. Wah, wah, wah. If y'all don't know, I absolutely hate Crocs. And if you are wearing them, I will call you out and make fun of you until you feel shamed. Good morning, Alex. How are you doing? I know you're possibly in that storm path.
What's up, brother? No, the storm has passed. It is pretty much in its process of dying out, I think. It's up there in Georgia, Tennessee at the moment. So, yeah, we're good. Hope everybody was safe through that. I know west coast of Florida in the Panhandle area got hit pretty hard. So it's been a lot of flooding and all that other kind of stuff. I'm doing great. Good morning, everybody.
I'm glad that you're doing good. Glad to hear that you're safe. And again, if you need anything, guys, again, we're a community. We're here for each other. Just reach out to us and we'll see what we can do from this end. But it's never fun when one of those storms roll through. I posted a question earlier on my X page, and I'd like to see just with everyone's reactions. Does ETH ever retake the price of gold? They're pretty close right now, but I have a strong feeling that ETH will never touch gold's price ever again. I think we've seen its last days, and I think it's going to zero. Alex, it looks like it's just you up here, so I'll get your thoughts on that. Do you think it ever retakes the price?
Yeah, it could. I think it will over time continue to trend to zero relative to Bitcoin, as all shitcoins tend to do. But I think in this next cycle pump, like all it, rising tide lifts all boats, right? Like they're going to get a big boost, and eventually they're going to continue to fade. But I could see them possibly. They're going to get a big boost this cycle. So we'll see. It's going to be crazy. I don't know if you guys can feel it, but there is a lot of bullish energy right now. We're, I think, probably going to breach 66K here very shortly, maybe even during this conversation that we're having today. And just so many bullish things happening, man. It's just wild to watch. MSTR is out there just crushing it. And look, whether you're in MSTR or not, like, the point is that draws institutional attention to Bitcoin. When you have additional institutional attention being drawn to Bitcoin, like all of the all the old TradFi arguments are being destroyed, like one by one. You know, you see it out on, if you guys don't lurk on LinkedIn, I encourage you to do so, because this is really interesting thing on LinkedIn where it's like, that's TradFi, man. That's the TradFi world. And you see guys, every now and then you see some dude pop into a Bitcoin discussion thread, and like, and they're coming up with all the age old, you know, the tired ass urban myth objections to Bitcoin. And like, not only is it great destroying those in discussions on LinkedIn, because every time you destroy one, people read it and they're like, oh, yeah, never thought of that. And, you know, it wakes people up. But also, it's becoming increasingly more obvious that you're kind of a cultish TradFi moron if you at this point you're just like, oh, poo-poo Bitcoin, because fill in the blank of all the typical nonsense. It's used for criminals, or the government's going to stop it, or just all the typical things that were debunked years and years and years ago, basically. You know, it's going to boil the oceans. Because you're seeing the largest financial institutions on the planet, and indeed sovereign nations, embracing Bitcoin now. So it's like, you can be in as much state of denial as you want, but you start to look pretty stupid after a minute. You know what I mean? It's like all of the major human societal sort of bellwether indicators are pointing in one direction. And at this point, if you're that TradFi knucklehead who hasn't studied Bitcoin and you're still out there opining on it, it's like, look, my view on that is, if you're out there listening to these people, stop it. Stop it. Stop listening to people who don't understand Bitcoin. They have cost you millions and millions of dollars. Stop listening to them. Stop it. Go find people who understand Bitcoin. Learn from them. Because otherwise, you've screwed yourself enough listening to these idiots. Stop doing that. Just stop.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I believe it's James Lavish, might have had a whole post on that and why everyone's going to be funneling into it. There's only so much time you can deny it, and then eventually you just have to admit that you were wrong and embrace it. And again, it's that early adopter move. The faster you get in here, the faster you're going to reap the rewards. I want to say good morning. I see some more people joining us. So I see AC, Bob Van Kirk, Wade, Gabe Lord. Good morning, Greg Foss out there in the audience. Guys, please come up here and join us. We love having discussion, getting everybody's views on everything.
Greg Foss, what's up, my man? Good morning. I want to just say hi to him real quick. I'm a big fan of Greg Foss. I think he's a good dude. Like, you know, there are people on Twitter who have at times given the man shit, but it's like, screw those guys. I've always thought that Greg was awesome for Bitcoin. And I think he educated a lot of people on stuff that people needed to understand and still need to understand. So anyway, thanks for what you've done for Bitcoin, Greg.
No, absolutely, Alex. You said that perfect. So Alex, I am curious. I feel the same way as you. I feel extremely bullish. I feel like we're about to just start ripping. What do you see in your tea leaves that are telling you this? Is it just sentiment on Twitter? Are you looking at different metrics? Or is it just you got this feeling in your gut like a storm's coming through?
I'm not a big tea leaf guy. I don't like technical analysis. I think technical analysis is generally like horoscopes for men. I don't put a lot of stake in it, but I go by my gut a lot. There's this thing called heuristic analysis. Maybe that's the wrong word. Don't hate me if I've got that wrong. But basically the concept is that like you can measure tons of data and you can crunch data through algorithms. You can crunch data through math. But at the same time, humans have this really bizarre ability to just kind of wing it, and a lot of times it works. So the example that I like to use is there's this book called Bitcoin is Venice, I think is what it's called, if I'm not screwing that up. But in this book, there's this example of like, you could sit there and you could do all of the math calculations of a baseball in flight heading towards an outfielder and figure out maybe where that ball is going to land. Or if you think about it, the outfielder is just looking at the ball and moving, and his gut is telling him where it's going to land, and they catch it. Same thing happens with like Coleman. You've experienced this with Draco, right? So for those of you who don't know, Coleman is like an expert dog trainer. He's got this beautiful Malinois that like at the range day in Nashville, they were playing catch with the Frisbee, and he'd throw the Frisbee super high in the air above the Malinois head. And this thing would like not only track the incoming Frisbee, but it would leap into the air like 6 feet straight up and pick this Frisbee out of the air. So it's basically doing all of these calculations on instinct. And I just think it's fascinating because I talk to a lot of people. I mean, that's my job. I talk to people every day, all day, and I get a sense from that. But also, I just look at all the really crazy bullish stuff, man. I saw this tweet today. Apparently, I don't know if you guys recall this, but FASB, FASB announced that they were going to change the accounting rules for how Bitcoin is accounted for on the balance sheet of public corporations. Right. And this announcement was made, I want to say it was like a year ago at this point, but they said that it's going to take effect at the end of 2024. Well, guess what? We're almost at the end of 2024. So what happens then? Well, what that means is that the NSTR balance sheet changes in terms of how it's reported according to FASB standards. And like you've got all these people looking at MSTR right now, and they're like, holy shit, this one particular stock has outperformed every single stock in the S&P 500. It's crushing everything since Saylor basically used Bitcoin as a strategy for the MSTR treasury and the balance sheet of MSTR starting back, I think, in 2020. So it's been about 4 years. They're crushing everything. And then after this year, the way they report it is going to change, and it's going to like mega crush it. So like I'm really looking forward to that because all eyes are going to be on it, in my opinion. Like you can't, it's just to me, there's just so many bullish signals out there in the market. By the way, we've passed 66K.
We smashed through it, and MicroStrategy is at 175 right now. And then I threw that that tweet made by Ben Workman up in the nest for everybody to take a look at it, talking about the FASBA rule and how it's going to impact MicroStrategy shares. So it is really fascinating, and I'm excited for Tuesday's episode because we will have Punter Jeff coming on, and so we'll be able to pick his brain about MicroStrategy and what he sees. And answer a lot of questions just about their accounting rules and things like that. So I'm really looking forward to that. But you're right, Alex. I feel the same way as you. It's happening. The bull run's starting. So make sure we're pointing people in the right direction. The big news that I saw that really confirmed my belief that the big players are coming is BYN Mellon just confirmed yesterday evening that they got SEC approval to hold Bitcoin assets for their clients. So that's a $50 trillion in wealth that they manage that now has access to Bitcoin for its clients. And I think Coinbase's days are numbered. I don't think there is any scenario where these big players are going to come in and kind of trust that circus, which is Coinbase. So I think now that you have BYN Mellon involved, you're going to start seeing a lot of money come through. Good morning, Texas Toast. How are you doing, sir?
Good morning. Picking up some stuff for the business. All good.
Totally agree with what you're saying in regards to the Bank of New York Mellon. They're a really old custodian, and they do custody for a lot of extremely wealthy families. And the interesting part about that is it's just one more check mark in that long list of credible sources that take Bitcoin seriously, right? And so every time you hear one of these happening, it's not only a signpost on the road, but arguably, I think Bank of New York Mellon is a super signaler. You have super signalers in the ecosystem of humanity that tell the rest of humanity what is legit and what is not legit. And when you see something like a multi-hundred-year-old custodian that serves some of the wealthiest families on the planet start to custody Bitcoin, I mean, that is a sign right there. And I think it affects people's perception of Bitcoin as a legitimate asset.
100%. And you can see how hard BlackRock is pushing to promote their product. Can you imagine how hard BYN and Mellon is going to do or is going to push? So it's fascinating. It's definitely entering its new phase. And so it's only more important as we get into this again to make sure we're pointing people in the right directions. If you're talking about it, don't have your friends or family members buy it from Coinbase. Please point them to somebody else. Personally, I use River and Strike. If you have something else you'd like to recommend it to somebody. Just Bitcoin only companies, never Coinbase. But I think we're going to go ahead and start jumping into this next breaking news that happened yesterday. So Swan released their court case filings. And so I'm just going to pull up the thread right here. It's pretty crazy. If someone was mentioning that it sounds just like a movie plot. And so I know we have people that work with Swan up here, and I know that they're not going to be able to talk about it. And so we're not going to ask them to. That's why I'm trying to get Joe Colasari to come up here, because I know that he was going to speak about it at some point today. But essentially, what the case filing is showing is that there were members of Swan's Bitcoin mining executives stole information and brought that information to a different company, and their pointing fingers to Tether was involved. And so I know Swan was trying to raise different series, and one of their last series had fell apart because of this outside pressure and kind of fuckery going around in the background. And so a lot of this stuff is above my head, but there's definitely a lot of bad actors that were involved. And so from what we saw that was released last night, it looks like there's a lot of deviousness going on. And so for myself, I don't like people that do that. I have zero respect for anybody that takes advantage of other people or causes a kind of damage. So I hope Swan's able to recoup what they had lost. I know this put a big damage or a big dampening on their business. I know that there's a lot of layoffs that happened during the summer because of this, and nobody really understood why. But this would explain a little bit more into the inner workings of what was going on. So, and I know Corey's, you know, a lot of people like to take shots at him. I personally don't have anything negative to say about Corey. I think he's very straightforward. And I think that's where a lot of people take issues with because he calls it how he sees it. And if you're promoting shit coins or you're promoting something that's sketchy, he calls it out, which rightfully I think he should. So does anybody up here, Terrence AC, Texas, do you guys want to talk about what was released last night?
Yeah, I'll jump in. You know, I haven't read through the entire lawsuit documentation. But from what I did see thus far, you know, whoever said it's like the script for a movie or a plot for a movie, it definitely seems like it 100%. You know, when you've got executives who are named in the documents, and then former employees who are effectively exfiltrating thousands of documents to prop up a brand new company that, oh, by the way, they all happen to be now working for. And then, you know, there's collusion with another external company like Tether to basically steal, you know, intellectual property, whether that's, I think it was like the mining, proprietary information related to mining. It really does seem like a movie, the way that this has gone down thus far. And I think it's good that it's now finally all coming to light, because like you mentioned, when we were at Nashville, you know, there were a lot of swans walking around who had just gotten the news. And for somebody who's not associated with Swan, it was kind of surprising. And now to kind of understand what was happening, it's number one, it's disappointing that it happened, especially with some of the people who were involved. But number two, you know, it shines light, and for me at least, it brings more confidence into a company like Swan and the way that they were organized, and everything was, you know, somewhat decentralized, or at least stovepipe, so that, you know, the mining operation didn't affect, you know, Swan vaults or, you know, their trading desk or anything like that. But personally, me, I've got to do a little bit more digging, and then probably a little bit more of the digesting of all the information out there.
Yeah, good summary, AC. And I think as the days and weeks move on, more evidence will come to light and we'll get kind of a clearer picture. But it is, I was a little bit in disbelief. I couldn't believe that someone would do that. Well, I guess I can believe someone would do that. It's just, I always hold Bitcoiners to a higher standard. And so seeing someone take advantage, that never sits well with me. So I really hope the guilty parties get what's coming to them.
Yeah. Good morning, and you know, I was also, sorry, Coleman.
No.
I was also surprised to see that there was somewhat of an attempt at like a hostile takeover. It seemed like they were trying to use this as a way to have some senior level people within Swan step down or kind of relinquish some of the keys to the castle, so to speak. And that, you know, that's just mind blowing, especially with Bitcoiners. You know, we always talk about incentives and incentives drive decisions. And, you know, I feel like it's a little bit of greed for whatever reason to try to hostily take over a company with leverage of information that you were privy to at the time. Wade, I see your hand up. I'll step down.
Yeah, it's like they, you know, I was really shocked to see the names in it, especially after watching, you know, content with at least one of the people. I've always had a lot of respect for Swan. I still use Swan. A lot of people have shifted. I struggle back and forth, you know, not knowing with what had gone on. And a lot of people were laid off who were good people. So the dirtbags, snake in the grass people who destroyed other people's lives, I have absolutely no respect for. It's like they understand the Bitcoin tech. They don't understand the ethos. They don't understand what it's about. And you know, I guess that's the fear with Wall Street getting into Bitcoin too. You know, do they understand the ethos behind it? I have no respect for those people though. I hope they get annihilated. Just, you know, they're just, to me, anybody that would destroy other people's lives in a company that has worked so hard to educate the community, and give people a good place to go to buy Bitcoin. You know, they're not a buy sell trade company. They're a buy company. They're a self custody company. And for a couple dirtbags to destroy lives and try to profit off that, I have to say I'm not disappointed in Swan at all. I'm really pissed off at people who would try to pull something like this though.
Yeah, I agree. And I heard Raphael, I think he was one of the main ringleaders of this coup, and just kind of hearing what he talked about with his background and stuff, that again, it really surprised me, but it also makes me extremely angry again that he would try and do something like this. So it didn't only affect the mining sector, it affected everybody that was at the the trading desks. So I think it was 40% of all employees at Swan were released. So it had a big impact. So hopefully Swan gets back out there again and is able to recover, which I'm sure they will. It's just going to take a little time, and it's unfortunate just because we're leading right up to a really big bull run. And I'm sorry, Lisa, I don't know if you heard me, but good morning, ma'am.
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear you. Hey, guys, good morning.
Morning.
Did you...
It's been so long since I've heard your voice, Alex. It's fantastic to hear your voice.
And you too.
Lisa, did you have any comments or anything you wanted to add on to the Swan case filing?
Alas, here we are again. No, I don't think so. I'm curious, just by anybody chiming in or show of hands, or like somebody asked yesterday if this is going to affect Bitcoin. And I guess what I was thinking about, I mean, when I talk to my friends or my family, folks that are not in the Bitcoin space, has anyone even heard of Swan? Like, and that is not meant to be disparaging towards Swan. Of course, we all know them. But if you're outside Bitcoin, do you know them? I don't know.
I think the same could be said about River and Strike. I don't think people outside of Bitcoin know them.
You're exactly right. Every Bitcoin company, right? It's like, wait, who's that? It's like some alien from Mars when you talk about a Bitcoin company. Yeah, you're right.
Except people know who Bank of New York Mellon is, though.
People know what Cash App is.
And unfortunately, I think a lot of people know what Coinbase is. And so we as a group need to have a calling to make sure that that name doesn't have any meaning with Bitcoin. We have to make sure that we get that across.
I actually had a dream last night that Coinbase got hacked, and that we went through this whole like FTX syndrome again, where everyone thought it was Bitcoin and Bitcoin got hacked, and we had to like relive the nightmare that was FTX.
Lisa, were you overdosing on magnesium again?
You know, no, I was traveling and it took me forever to get to where I am. And when I finally like laid my head down, I think I just went into, I don't know. I think all of this kind of the Swan news was spinning. And then of course, Coinbase was down yesterday during trading. I mean, just all of that, I think my brain was trying to process.
Yeah, what a complete shit show. The price didn't even move that high yesterday to cause, you know, mass FOMO. And yet their website crashed. I have nothing nice to say about Coinbase. But then again, I think that's why Bank New York Mellon is stepping up.
Do you know what I find odd? Is that every time there's like a major, major like bull market running pressure, somehow, for some reason, Coinbase always stops trading. I find that peculiar. Does anybody else find that odd?
100%, Alex. And, you know, especially since this happened during the last cycle, and you would have figured that a company of their size would have fixed whatever technical issues or supposed technical issues they had back then. But it's pretty obvious that it's not a technical issue when it only happens in one direction. And it's when it's going up. So there's something else there, at least for me, there's something else there behind the scenes that isn't transparent.
Yeah, to everyone. One direction with massive buying pressure, right? I can't exactly think of a time where this happened with them when the price was going down. It's only on days that it's going up, and days that it's going up like really hard.
So would that infer that they're just trying to cap the price? Or are they just because they're trying to do something else?
I don't know. Maybe it's nothing. I just think it's weird. And it's, to me, it's happened enough times that it's a pattern, right? Like I've seen it I don't know, maybe a half dozen times now.
Have there been days, do we know, where all the shit coins have a lot of volume and are going up, but Bitcoin isn't, and Coinbase has had to shut down, or it's just Bitcoin?
It's been going on since, God, pre-2017. This isn't new. Coinbase has been doing this for a decade now.
I know that there's been times where the shitcoins have been going up a lot higher in price than Bitcoin has, but I've never seen anybody post that Coinbase was down during those times. So, yes, Terrence, you make a good observation with that. I think it is only when Bitcoin is going. And again, it just could be coincidence, but I think Alex is right that it has happened enough where it does cause some concern, and definitely have to investigate a little further on that. But I think, again, Coinbase could be in a world of trouble if BlackRock just decides, look, we don't trust your shenanigans going on. There's a lot of rumors. We're going to just move all of our stuff to BNY Mellon. And then we'll find out if they were printing paper Bitcoin.
Oh, wouldn't that be wild if all of the ETFs basically said we're all moving to Bank of New York Mellon as a custodian? That would just be wild. And then it causes the failure of Coinbase. Like, that would be an epic situation. That'd be a big rug. They have a lot of Bitcoin on their platform.
They're supposed to have a lot of Bitcoin on their platform. So that's where you could find out. But I do think you're going to see a large portion of the ETF Bitcoin being moved to BNY Mellon. I think it's just a better talking point when you're trying to push your product. But we've been hitting on this topic for a while. Does anyone have anything else you'd like to comment or add to it?
When is the flipping of ETH overtaking Bitcoin occurring? I'm curious.
Unless you have a time machine, was there a time where it was close? I think that was the closest you were ever going to get.
I feel like VCs are abandoning shitcoins en masse. Like, it's no longer the cool thing to do. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, except Raoul Paul. He's still deep into it.
Yeah, but he's not a VC. I look at Raoul Paul more like he's an influencer shitcoin promoter. It's not the same thing as a VC. He's not a real VC. You understand what I'm saying? Like, real VCs don't go and make fucking YouTube videos about the shit they're investing in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, that's true. I think, yeah, the VC guys would be more like the all-in pod guys who do seem to be leading crypto mostly. But I saw Raoul Paul posting just yesterday where he's going in deep on Solana and Doge. And it was a pretty interesting tweet thread because some Bitcoiners were like, what are you doing? Do you not get Bitcoin? And he's like, no, I actually do. I 1000% get Bitcoin, the thesis and everything you guys talk about. He said, but because of who I am, I'm paraphrasing, these are my words, but he was saying, because of who I am and what I do and with my trading skills and blah, 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 I need to do this to leverage.
I don't, that's what he's saying. If you read between the lines though, what he's really saying is I'm still broke. I need more, I need a bigger stack. So I'm going to promote shitcoins because I feel like I still need to do this.
Yeah,
like what person who's successful as a trader does this shit? You don't hear from them at all. Really successful traders are quiet. They're just basking in their success. You know what I mean? They don't feel the need to get out there and pump and dump a whole bunch of shit coins. Like, who does that?
Yeah, just
good point. Good point, Alex.
Raoul Paul and Mark Cuban.
Yeah, Mark Cuban's trying to make a name for himself for trying to take over Gensler's job. Have you all heard about that?
That would be the stupidest thing imaginable. Like, I suppose if you look at all the people who are appointed to positions of executive power throughout all the regulatory agencies of the current administration, it's a gigantic circus. And the bigger of a circus freak that you are, the more likely you'll probably have one of those executive roles. However, if the winds change, if fate has it that Trump survives the next few assassination attempts and actually is elected president of the United States of America, and then Vivek and RFK and Elon get their hands on the federal government and start dismantling this shit, then hopefully we won't have idiots in positions of authority like that anymore. God, I can't believe I just said all that out loud, but that's all true, is it not?
It is. It's crazy. The thing that was you just mentioned, out if Trump survives his next assassination attempts, the big news I thought that came out last night was the reports that their Iranians have smuggled in 9 surface-to-air missiles, and supposedly they're going to be trying to take out Donald Trump's plane. So people believe that.
I don't know how you could possibly validate that, though. I mean, I think that view started from a guy who's a former U.S. Navy chief that has some very outspoken opinions, and maybe I'm not saying maybe that it's true. Maybe it is. I don't know. I just think it'd be very hard to validate that.
Well, on our back channels, we are posting it, and I was waiting for Randy's thoughts. And when it came up, Randy didn't say no, there was a 0% chance of it happening. So that was my confirmation that there's probably a strong likelihood that they are out there. So that's my go-to guy.
Where's Randy Kelly when you need him? Is he in the audience? Looking. I don't see him. Damn.
I think the storm's hitting him. He said he didn't have power this morning.
Yeah,
but anyways, go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the very few days he's not posted the Daily Intelligence Bulletin, which is fantastic, by the way. For those of you who have never seen this thing or read it, I think there's a link to one. Nope, there's a link to yesterday's, maybe, up in the nest. Go check that out. So that's curated. We have like an intel group, like Bitcoin Veterans has an intel group, where there's a whole bunch of dudes who are either former intelligence guys, or they're special operations guys, or they're just dudes who are familiar with assessing sort of incoming information and forming sort of like an overview of the battlefield, so to speak. And so they curate this thing, and then they build this thing called the Daily Intelligence Bulletin, which they put out. Now, a lot of it is geopolitical kind of information, but if you're into that kind of thing, go check that out. It's a pretty cool read.
Yeah, definitely highly recommend reading it. It takes 5 minutes, but you're caught up on all the major events going on. So there's no excuse not to take a one over on that. And we post it every day on our X handle. So there should be no reason why you're not following us, but just go check it every morning. Drops at about 7:30 Central Time. So just kind of going over my notes, this happened earlier in the week, but we haven't had a chance to really hit on it. But Telegram is now providing IP addresses and phone numbers on requests due to the indictment of their founder. So it looks like they finally gave in.
Yeah, it's wild. I want to... if he's still in the audience, is he still in the audience? Yeah, I want to shout out this guy, Justin Beckler. So Justin had a thread earlier. I don't know if you want to talk about this anymore or if you just want to let it go. But just for those of you who are in the audience, check out this guy's profile. Go check out his thread or his tweets, because he had a big thread that he did on the Swan thing. Now, I can't comment on the Swan thing, but if you have any interest in talking more about that, this guy's done a pretty in-detailed thread about it.
It was an amazing thread. Yeah, thanks, Alex. I was going to ask Justin to jump on stage just to post it, but you're right. I think we've moved on.
No. We can go back and hit on it. I just didn't have, again, it's over my head, a lot of this stuff. And so if someone could definitely hit on it and talk more, I would be very interested on listening. Justin, give us a thumbs up if you're able to come up here and talk about it, please.
Shit, while we're waiting, shout outs to Allison, you know who you are, Gabe, Consummate, Terrence, Johan, all good peoples out there.
Coleman, it's a, there's his thumbs up. All right.
I think Jacob's taking care of it in the back.
Hey, guys.
Hey, good morning, Justin.
Hey, yeah. So it's a 50-page document, and it looks like it's easy reading, actually. It's not legalese. It's pretty clear-cut, and it seems like there's tons of evidence that at the heart of everything is Tether funding, according to the lawsuit, and pretty severe allegations against Rafa Zaguri. And he is not listed as a defendant. I'm assuming that's a jurisdictional issue, but well orchestrated plan to basically take the Bitcoin mining operation that Swan had built and steal it. And it's pretty clear evidence here in screenshots of emails. For instance, .67, Swan uncovered the Rain and Hellfire plan when blindsided by conspirators coordinated resignations, I think all within an 8-hour period. And it looks like Zaguri had sent out an email with a action plan on that. Defendants accessed, downloaded, and collectively took large volumes of Swan's confidential and proprietary information and trade secrets. And it looks like pretty clear forensic investigation, open and shut on that. So I don't know what the counterclaims, countersuits will look like. And I haven't even gotten all the way through this. I had a long day yesterday, up to about page 40. There's still tons of screenshots. Unbelievably, the law firm that filed the PDF, and if you have the original PDF that someone has on a Google Drive, I think I put it in the thread there as well. It's redacted, but you can copy and paste everything and just read the redactions, which is unforgivable. But yeah, let me find the thread maybe, because it kind of, yeah, and somebody also posted Harsha Goli up there. So that is that the actual filing there? His thread is great as well. So I would recommend looking at that.
Yes, I believe the Harsha Goli's up in the nest as actually the filing. And then I think if you just follow through, it's his explanation of what was going on.
Yeah, and it, I mean, there's not much room for speculation. It's all laid out there in the suit. And if anybody's interested, I would recommend printing it out and reading it, because it's pretty freaking damning, man. I mean, there's a level of maliciousness as well. So again, it's going to be interesting to see the other side of this. It kind of feels like we're watching a true crime drama, and we're getting one side and leaves little doubt of who did what. But I mean, I don't know how there can be another side, but I guess there will be.
What course of action does Swan have to recoup all the losses that have taken place because of this?
Yeah, I have no idea, man. I'm not a lawyer or anything like that. Carlos Siri, I guess, would be the one to ask that. I have no idea. I mean, I don't know how you reclaim what's been stolen. But lots of interesting tidbits as well. Like, it looks like on one phone call, on a whim, pretty much, it seems that Corey had been advised about a mining operation that could be acquired in Tasmania. And on one phone call to Tether, that was arranged. $25 million in funding, which would have meant a $1 billion valuation. So it's kind of interesting to read this and see some of the inner workings of just how easy it is to get funding from Tether.
like you said, Justin, it's pretty clear cut. I don't get how people are still able to come out and bash Corey and Swan on this. If you click through, you can definitely find there's still a large portion of people that are giving him shit. And I don't get it, because from what I read, it seems like he was blindsided and just taken advantage of.
Absolutely. According to the allegations, I mean, it's 50 pages of clear cut allegations of not just carrying it out, but maliciousness, which is what I don't understand. I have no connection whatsoever with Swan, or never met Corey, never talked to him. So I'm not at all defending them. I just think the lawsuit is interesting from that standpoint. And yeah, the shit talking I see on Corey, I don't quite get that either, because a lot of it doesn't seem to have anything to do with a lawsuit. It's just kind of like, I told you he was an asshole or something like that. Like, it makes no sense. So I don't quite understand the personal level of that. It doesn't seem to have anything to do with a lawsuit, so I don't get it.
Okay, I can maybe shed a little bit of light on this. I can't talk about the lawsuit or anything that has anything to do with the lawsuit, but in regards to people not liking Corey, I'm gonna share some background information that's a little bit personal. Some of you are aware of it, but I feel like I need to say this, and the reason I need to say this is because the reason that a lot of people go after Corey nowadays is because he defended me. Okay, so I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but like about a year, maybe a year and a half ago, I don't know how long it's been, but there's this one guy who was part of this group called Tem, and he started these rumors about me being involved in some kind of scam where we defrauded a whole bunch of investors of their gold. And he basically created this narrative. He made all these videos, and he just basically went on about this for months, where he was essentially saying that basically I defrauded a whole bunch of investors. And during this period of time, Corey basically came to my defense big time. I mean, he went out in public, like, swinging hardcore at you know, this narrative that I was some kind of a criminal that did this stuff. And Corey went so far as to, like, get in people's DMs and say, hey, why are you, like, amplifying this narrative? Because it's not true. And when people would be like, nah, I can say whatever the fuck I want, Corey would block them. Now, he blocked a lot of people. And a lot of these people are, they're so-called Bitcoin maxis. They call themselves Bitcoin maxis. Many of them do. And, like, this created this scenario where a whole bunch of Bitcoiners think Corey's a douchebag because of that. And I just want to put it out there and say, hey, man, like, look, the reason he was blocking all those people is because he was defending me. All right, so for all the people who are out there, like, want to hate on Corey for that stuff, fuck you guys. That's all I've got to say about that.
Thank you for sharing that. I personally, I didn't know that, Alex.
Terrence, did you have a thought here?
He's talking to you, uppercase.
Yeah, he had his hand up.
I'm at the gym. Is the background noise really bad?
It's terrible. It's
my phone. Okay, hold on.
You're fine. He's fucking with you.
Say hi to Larry.
Hey, good morning, Joe. I'm glad you're able to join us.
Yeah, good morning. I just wrapped up court. Sorry, Coleman, I didn't get back to your message. I apologize.
No, you're quite all right. I figured you're going to be busy, so I'm happy that we're able to get you. We have a hard stop at in 10 minutes, but I'd definitely like to get your thoughts on the Swan case filing and what you think that the course of action they have to kind of recoup what was stolen.
Well, I'll just tell you this. I've been on both sides of this with clients for my entire career when cases get filed. And what I think is important and objective is that, you know, when there's these types of suits filed and commercial litigation, business transactions, there's always two sides of the story, right? There's a reason why there's process. There's a reason why there's discovery. Both sides, when a complaint is filed, do not have all the facts. There have been many cases I'm involved with where I think cases are fantastic and they get worse. And there are other cases where I file them and I say, you know, they may have a claim here, and the case gets much better after discovery is conducted. So the accurate and objective thing to remember is that when someone files a complaint, those are allegations, and the allegations get tested in two ways. They get tested on questions of law, where the judge rules on motions to dismiss, and then they get tested in discovery with facts and ultimately with either a summary judgment or with a trial. It's a long process. What I will tell you is that in business transactions, okay, it's not at all uncommon for there to be allegations against folks that they misappropriated assets, that they were underhanded and conspiring against the company. And it may be legitimate, right? Like these claims may be legitimate. It's very difficult to tell and assess these things. And I just say this honestly, when you just get a complaint, because what you're hearing in a complaint is lawyers who have put together claims that they think are meritorious. And obviously, they have to have ethical obligations before you even file a complaint. I could lose my license if I file a complaint that's not well grounded in fact and law. That's sort of the privilege of, you know, representing companies and entities. And when you file it, right, like they hopefully did their diligence in making sure that they had meritorious claims. The other side has no response, right, until an answer is filed to the complaint, admitting or denying the allegations, until they move to dismiss part of the complaint. You don't really hear their side of the story. And so it's really important. I mean, I think a lot of people hear, oh, this person's been sued for fraud, or this person's been sued for breach of contract, or this person's been sued for XYZ. A lot of times you don't hear when they're victorious and they get those claims dismissed. People in today's world love to glam onto the headlines of, you know, this person's filed a suit. But the reality is that a lot of the times, you know, those suits have no merit. They're frivolous. I'm not saying at all or suggesting at all that that's the case with the Swan suit. I don't know, right? I'm just somebody trying to be objective in reading the complaint for where it stands. I do know that the best part of the complaint for me, the most persuasive rather, is there's quite a few exhibits that are embedded into the complaint, emails, other communications. Those are, you know, pretty damning. Okay. I will put much more weight on actual exhibits and documents embedded into complaints than lawyers saying there is a conspiracy. And, you know, because it's very easy. We're, you know, it's our job to tell stories, really. That's a good lawyer, a good trial attorney is really a good storyteller and is credible in his stories. And you know, they're very skilled. So focus on the actual hard evidence that's comes to light. I'm sure you'll hear more over the coming months. We'll watch it with sort of an open, objective mind.
Thank you for clarifying that, Joe. Really quick, I just want to give a quick thank you to our partners, Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms training at paladintowertactics.com. Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Punchplate, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate at punchplate.com. And Black Sheep Ammo, restock your supplies at blacksheepammo.com. Does anyone have any questions for Joe? Justin, I see your hand up.
Yeah, Joe, I'm just picturing a trial with a jury. And, I mean, some of these statements in the emails, like rain and hellfire, and something along the lines of this can't be friendly, this needs to, you know, the X that needs, it was very, very orchestrated, planned ahead of time after allegedly stealing basically everything that Swan paid for. So I'm just wondering what jurors would think about that email. I mean, seemed to have a pretty
So let me just give you my overall thoughts on this. Reading the complaint and handling dozens, at least if not hundreds, of similar types of cases, okay, disputes, business transactions, I would place an incredibly high wager, probably the highest I could, that something like this is resolved and settled rather than goes to trial. Now, the prices are always the key. It's not necessarily about legitimacy of claims. It's always, you know, can you come to an agreement for a number that works for all the parties? And it's a math problem, right? Like, I'll just give you the analysis that I do. You know, people pay me a lot of money to. If you think that your chances of success are, let's say, 30%, you're going to go to trial and you think it's 30%. Well, probabilistically, that means you have a 70% chance of losing at trial, right? So if the amount of hard damages is, let's just say, $1 million. I'm just simplifying the math. That means that with a 30% chance of success, meaning a 70% chance of losing, and a potential hit against you in damages of $1 million, you should pay $700,000 to resolve the case. Okay, if you get in and under that, it's probably a good resolution. It's a simple math problem, right? You take your expected chance of success or loss, and you multiply it by what you find to be reasonable hard damages. Now, a lot of times plaintiff's counsel will, you know, inflate the damage. They'll say, we're owed $1 billion. And you say, no, that's not realistic. No jury's going to award that even if we lose. They're going to award, you know, $10 million or $5 million, whatever. So you have to sort of do the calculus. And, you know, it's really funny. I hear all the time in, like, these rooms about, like, risk and, you know, assessing risk and sitting in a risk chair and all this stuff. That's literally what attorneys do all day long. They assess risk. That's all we do, right? All we do is try to figure out, you know, what is the likelihood you get tagged for a very high, award? What's the likelihood you win? You know, try to protect your downside. In this case, just knowing the facts and knowing that I anticipate there'll be some positive things for the defendants that will come out, you know, but there's still going to be a huge risk, and you just have to do a simple calculation on that and you know, put your bets down, because that's what this is going to go. I would, like I said, I would place a hefty wager that this is resolved without a trial.
And Joe, how do you think Tether's virtually bottomless pockets as far as a legal war chest factors in?
Yeah, I mean, it factors in because it makes them more willing to fight the fight, right? Like, more resources. So if you're Tether, okay, and you're facing this sort of onslaught, right? You again, just giving my free legal advice, right? You start to try to figure out ways to make this story, make this narrative, not about what you are accused of doing and what the other side doing. What did they do to jeopardize business operations? What did they fail to do that they could have done to put themselves in a better position? You start, you know, getting mired in discovery battles. Lawyers love discovery battles. They'll want people's phones. They'll want people's emails. They'll want people's Twitter accounts. They'll want every single thing they can, even stuff that's not even necessary, because it's a way to turn the knife against the other side. And with more litigation resources, right, there's a lot of things you can request, a lot of motions you can file, a lot of delay you can do, because our process lets there be a lot of transparency. And it can get very uncomfortable for folks. Even, you know, I've had cases settle where the reason they settled is because the founder or the company or the CEO didn't want to turn over his phone. Not because of anything in the actual litigation, but because he had other things on that phone that, if they were produced, would not look good. And he, you know, you can fight with protective orders and all this stuff and try to keep discovery siloed and narrow. The reality is, you know, once it's out there in the public domain, it's out there in the public domain. So, you know, there's a lot of even extrinsic factors that can cause someone to resolve a suit that aren't even necessarily about the merits of the claims.
Did anybody have any other questions for Joe about this? I'm going to take that as a no. We had a hard stop today at 10. I'm sorry about that. So we're going to go ahead and start wrapping up. I want to give a quick thank you to everybody who's out there listening. I see Max Major out there, Bitcoin Cowboy, Steve Barber, Rowdy Night Train, Greg Foss, Dom Bay. I really appreciate you guys tuning in and listening to us. Make sure you join us on Monday again. We are doing this at 9:00. We do it every weekday, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Central Time. And on Tuesday's show, we're going to have Punter Jeff joining us. So make sure you tune into that. That'll be a great one, talking MicroStrategy. Again, MicroStrategy right now, 176 a share. So it's doing some big stuff. Bitcoin's at 66K. Looks like we're really getting into that bull run. So let's get pumped up. Let's let Bitcoin do its thing over the weekend. Catch us Tuesday night with the Bitcoin Veteran video podcast. We're going to have Paladin Tower Tactics. Scott Willie will be joining us again. So 7 o'clock Eastern time, we'll be running that. Get out there, plant your seeds over the weekend. Make sure you're ready to help everybody, direct them in the right direction. River, Strike, never Coinbase. If you all use Swan, promote Swan. Again, get out there and just make sure we're pointing people in the right directions. That's all I got. Again, thank you everybody who helped us today. Terrence, uppercase and lowercase. Bob Van Kirk, AC. Justin, Joe, always a pleasure having you come up here. And Alex, thank you for coming on. And I know Lisa jumped off a little earlier, but thank you all. You guys take care and go crush it.